Welcome to Sustainable Talks with NNN, Nicolo Giusti and
Nicolo Duranti,
where we talk about sustainability in the fashion supply chain.
We interview the best players in fashion and challenge them to the real full sustainability.
From material suppliers to factories, designers, sustainable association and more. We want to make clarity if a fashion can be sustainable or not.
This podcast is sponsored by ourselves and no one else with our time, experience and fun.
We hope you have fun to listen to us and spread the word.
You can find us also in Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Just search us as Sustainable Talks with NNN and you will find us.
Have fun.
If you greenwash, even if you don't realize it, you put yourself at reputational risk because someone is going to find out.
Hi, everyone. Today we have with us a special guest, a very special guest we never had, Nico.
Thank you for being here, Professor.
We have Ioannis Ioannou, professor, advisor, keynote speaker, and influencer on sustainability leadership and corporate responsibility. We want to start asking, what is sustainability for you?
I think sustainability is the challenge of our time. It's the challenge of our generation. It's the task that we have to deliver a planet that is hopefully better shape than when we found it. And I think that challenge extends to pretty much every aspect of our life, right? How we live our lives, our lifestyles, our jobs, our economy, pretty much everything. It is the challenge of our time.
What are the biggest approach? What are the biggest trends today?
The trends that I see are mostly from a business perspective. The main trend that we see here is that there is increasingly big doubt about the ability of the capitalist system to really bring everyone on board and to deliver and to create value for everybody. So there's a very nice, actually, New Yorker cartoon that I often show to my students, and it says, yes, we might have destroyed the planet, but for a beautiful moment in time, we created a lot of value for shareholders. The idea here is that we created a lot of financial value, but at a huge cost to the environment, to the planet, a lot of the times in terms of social issues and social inequalities. Those trends are coming back to bite us. Those trends are creating the doubts across the world about the system and its merits, and from the perspective on where I see things, is creating a lot of pressure for companies to adopt a new model of corporate leadership.
Sustainability is a big cost for the company. What is the true ROI behind
it? Yeah, I think this is a fantastic question because many people have misconceptions about sustainability, that if you become a sustainable company, you will always suffer financially. And that's almost an instinctive reaction. And for me, that no longer makes any sense. I mean, just look around you. Look at the problems that the world is facing. How could you possibly be a thriving business by ignoring these trends? It means that you don't understand your customers. It means that you don't understand your industry. Think about automobiles. How could you set up a company in the automobile industry and ignore climate change? Are you going to ask, is it a cost? Of course it's not a cost. I mean, you don't have a business if you don't deal with these issues, right? So what do we know from academic research is that if you truly embed sustainability, so forget about greenwashing, forget about box ticking, but actually rethinking your strategy and your products and services so that they are future fit in a world in which these problems actually matter, which is the reality, basically, then you can start seeing why is it the case that sustainable companies not only are doing at least as well, but are actually performing better. And there's many mechanisms. Think about it. New generations are much more likely to want to work with companies that have this commitment. We know from a lot of evidence that these companies are more innovative. They use sustainability as a catalyst for more and better innovation. They build a more solid social license to operate. They have more stable relationships with their entire supply chain and stakeholders. So they have a lot of intangible assets. And we also know that they have better access to finance. Investors are looking at them more favorably. They have lower capital constraints. So there's many, many reasons. So we don't just say, you know, very randomly or very abstractly, oh, sustainability pays and has a high return on investment. Actually, we have measured this and we know the level below. In other words, how exactly it happens. I will tell you guys, if you hear people that say, oh, it's costly, oh, I don't know, that means, you know, they haven't even tried or they have no idea how to do this, right? Because forget about sustainability for a second. All companies have limited resources. Can you imagine being, let's say, a pharmaceutical company and say, oh, this R&D is very expensive? I mean, exactly. Or in the fashion industry, can you say, oh, that creative director is just too expensive? You know what I mean? You have to make your choices. If you make them right, they're not costs. They are investments because they're part of your business model. And that's what management is all about. How do you allocate limited resources in order to achieve your objective? It's not just a sustainability issue. Think about it. You're a company. You have the option. Should I invest more in R&D? Or should I invest more in marketing? Or should I pay higher wages? Forget about sustainability. Still a dilemma, but the problem is that you have limited resources. That's what we teach at business schools, right? That's the idea. How do I make those trade-off choices when I have limited resources in a way that is strategic? That's what strategy is at the end of the day. So costs are only costs if you're doing it in the wrong way, if you're doing it because everyone else is doing it, but you have no clue how it fits in your business model. Right, but if you do it selectively on the material issues that matter for your business model and particularly for your industry, then of course the evidence is clear. It pays off. There is no strategy that it's easy. There is no successful company whose success was God-given. Successful companies are successful because executives wrestle, struggle with difficult issues, and the best ones resolve them and they have successful companies. Typical example, oh, our customers are not going to buy it, so we're not going to do anything, right? That's deflection of responsibility, right? But let me give you an example. Maybe this is a nice example to see. When IBM invented the first personal computer, how big was the CPU? Do you know?
A room.
A room. So did IBM say, oh, my customers are not going to buy it, they should go build a bigger home in order to buy my product, and unless they build bigger homes, I'm not going to innovate in order to reduce the size? No, that would be absurd. But in sustainability, we say that, right? We say, oh, the customers are not going to buy it, let them go educate themselves and then come and buy my more expensive product. Makes no sense, right? And the most inspiring of leaders, what do? They take these trade-offs, let's say cost versus price, and they say, here's your challenge organization. Here's your challenge, my team. This is your moonshot opportunity. This is your motivational, your inspirational target. Because you know what? If we produce a fantastic product and we are sustainable, it's the $1 million question. We're winning, we're making the world a better place, and we're a thriving business. And you see, you have to inspire people to innovate. Do you know of any CEO that comes to work and say, good morning, people, today let's maximize shareholder value? Nobody says that. Nobody is inspired from that, right? So when you have this sustainability commitment and it's real and it's authentic, you can inspire people. As I often tell my students, you know, nobody inspires from the comfort of their couch. You need to have a problem in order to find to find a solution in order to innovate. You don't just sit on the couch and say, okay, let me innovate today, right? So inspiring leaders take these problems, they reconceptualize them. That's what leadership is. They reconceptualize them for the organization, and then they inspire the organization to solve them. And those that are successful are the ones that build the more lasting of strategies.
You are one of, I think, our first guests that is not really deep into fashion. So we are very curious to ask you what your thought of sustainability and fashion.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of people often associate fashion and often fast fashion as the ultimate example of consumerism, right? As the whole idea of, you know, buying products that perhaps we don't need simply because the brands are selling to us the products and therefore we end up buying and using much more than we need, creating more and more waste, using more and more resources. And the like. However, I see the fashion industry getting under the spotlight, under increasing scrutiny, and under increasing demands and expectations about how they handle themselves, how they use materials, how they dispose of materials, and as part of this broader trend, if you like, to deal with wasteful consumerism. This is not to suggest, of course, that, you know, fashion and fashion brands were, you know, set up in order to waste that material. In many ways, no industry was set up in order to destroy value, right? A lot of industries, even oil and gas, was set up in order to create value. The question, it's not so much about intentions as it is about how do we now course correct? And I'm very encouraged when, limited as they might be, we do see all these trends in the fashion industry, both in terms of experimentation, in terms of materials, and about business model, the whole idea of a secondhand market for products and services. And if I'm being honest, I do think that the industry is also facing pressures from the consumer side. I think that it's a generational issue. Millennials demand more from fashion brands. They demand more transparency. And especially when it comes to not only environmental, but also social issues. For instance, the Rana Plaza disaster was a very important wake-up call that drew attention to the issues of, you know, the textile industry more broadly. Many industries go through those disasters. Many industries need that, you know, slap in the face, if you like, to really wake up to the interdependencies and the depth of their supply chain. It took a disaster like that to bring fashion brands together in order to think about, do we need guidelines or self-regulation, in other words, for textile companies. This scrutiny that all the brands, including the fashion brands, are facing these days are course correcting for some of those bad behaviors. So I'm very encouraged that the fashion industry is so close to the consumer that you're very attuned to this. Changes.
You were the
exactly. You're one of the industries that first sort of receives the signals of the changing trends and changing demands. Some fashion brands are making the right investments in the right direction.
Another big trend in fashion is greenwashing. Say, oh, I am better than you because I do this that is recycled 1%. Is this common in other industries?
I would say it's everywhere. One of them that is increasingly in the press recently about greenwashing is, of course, the finance industry. All of these asset managers and investors claiming to be investing responsibly or have funds that are actually green funds, or as we call them, ESG funds. I think greenwashing, it's everywhere, it's abundant. But here's what I often ask when I see a company greenwashing. Clearly, the company should not greenwashing. Let's be honest about that, right? But the question is, why are they greenwashing? Because answering that question to me means that they are feeling some pressure, as Nico was saying earlier, to say that I do something. In other words, they have at least some sensor, right, that the world is changing, and it's almost like fake it until you make it sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to praise companies that greenwash, but for me, it almost feels like, you know, if you greenwash, even if you don't realize it, you put yourself at reputational risk because someone is going to find out. There are NGOs that pay attention to these things. There is active civil society. There is activists that pay attention to these things. And you will be found out. And then you'll get, again, the slap in the face that we said earlier, and you get your act together.
That's why we founded NNN, Sustainable Talks with NNN, because we were tired about greenwashing. We need to be careful. Things properly. We need the science. We need the fact. We need the LCA. We need to know how much water do you need to make a mushroom, for example.
I don't think we need to be overly critical, right? Because you know what? All these are attempts. In other words, you hear a lot of the times people say, oh, electric cars. You know, if the electricity is produced by coal, then electric cars might actually be worse. Fine, but you need to break the cycle at some point, because if you have a lot of electric cars, you put pressure on the energy system not to use coal, right? And therefore you go to renewables. You have to break that cycle in order for the system to break. So that's very important to understand. So the easiest thing is though in the world is for anyone to sit on their couch and be a cynic, right? Because don't get me wrong, greenwashing can happen with bad intentions, and it should be called out, and it should they should be held accountable. But not everything needs to be seen through a cynical lens.
How do you approach your students and how they approach sustainability?
It's natural, especially for millennials going forward and younger generations. The question is, how could I be at a business school and not talk about sustainability, right? That was not the world that I entered in 12 years ago, where, you know, I used to start a class by having a debate, shareholders versus, you know, stakeholders, classic debate that one has in the classroom. 10 years ago, I would have a really hard time finding anyone to defend the stakeholder point of view. Fast forward to 12 years, I have a hard time anyone saying that it's only shareholders, right? Attitudes have changed dramatically. So it's both easy and inspiring to teach the new generations of students sustainability, because they want to learn. And the final thing I'm going to say is that it feels very personal to them, whether it's through their own consumption choices, whether it's through their own, you know, how they use their savings or how they build pensions, or as a matter of fact, the impact that they're going to have with their careers, right? And for them, it is very personal, because they might run businesses, set up businesses, or work for businesses, right? So it is very personal, and they get it. And it does make my job much easier, because it's not a convincing anymore. It's about the how, not the why.
Can you share with us your most successful story on the sustainability?
Yeah, I think let's be clear that in the domain where I work, in the domain of sustainability in business, I don't think that any business is anywhere close to being, you know, this ideal sustainable company, this company that, you know, it's 100% sustainable, solved all its environmental and social challenges, and it's, you know, thriving and is producing social value. So I don't think it's a matter of naming particular businesses, because there's a lot of ratings and rankings out there. The usual suspects are some of my favorite companies. Like, think about Unilever, for instance. Think about companies like Nike that are experimenting with new things. Think about companies like Novo Nordisk, a company in the pharmaceuticals. Think about Natura in Brazil. What encourages me is that a lot of executives out there, they are experimenting with new business models. For instance, I'm a big fan of the circular economy. I think there is a lot of value in thinking how we don't get rid of resources, but rather we design products so that when we're done with them, we get the resources back, and then we produce the new generation of products. And we do all that with renewable energy and so on. You know, when everyone else in the high tech industry said, I'm going to go net zero, Microsoft came out and said, I'm going to go negative. I'm going to take out all the carbon I put in the atmosphere since I was founded. So, you know, I like to see that, because I cannot predict how innovative they will become, but I can see the direction, right? It's a race to the top. Some of these companies try to do it better than the others. So I think that's why, I mean, we're in the right direction. And that's some of my favorite stories, in the sense that seeing that sustainability became a dimension of competition, and companies, at least some companies, are trying to do it better.
We see last 2 weeks, all the big fashion companies are coming out with this new material, this meshroom material, but nobody has seen yet in reality how does it look like. And we are not really sure how we look like, if when you see the product, it will be nice or not. They are advertising from now to go out at the end of the year. Do you see this as this marketing operation as something successful at the end?
I mean, you need to, I think you need to acknowledge that experimentation that we talked about earlier, right? So especially in this domain, you need to understand that sometimes, you know, the first product is not going to be the perfect product. It's not going to be the perfect material. I mean, I understand the hype, you know, don't get me wrong. You still need to sell the product that you're producing in this case, but sometimes things evolve over time. So in other words, you know, it's like technologies. They come into an industry, there's early adopters that are willing to take a risk, for instance, right? For example, the first iPhone was not the perfect phone, but it massively improved over time, and then it became a mass market product. Think about Tesla. The first couple of models that they introduced, they were very expensive, very high-end products, and then the prices came down. So, you know, the product that is introduced on day one, especially if it's a new product, is not necessarily the final product. It's not necessarily the one that's going to reach the mass market. The question is there, the challenge there is, are there enough early adopters that would allow you to even start building some scale, experimenting more, and then eventually perfect the product that you're going to sell and then reach the mass market that you can sell, right? So you have to start from somewhere. And we've seen this disruption in industry can come both from above, in other words, more expensive, more luxury products like Tesla did in terms of entering the automobile industry. It didn't attack on below. This was not a cheap car, right? But you also see sometimes it can attack from below. It's a cheaper product with inferior quality, but it attacks a different market. But over time, it can increase in terms of market. It can increase in terms of quality and then attack from below the dominant player in any industry.
We work in a very traditional business, fashion business, especially leather and fabric. It's very, very traditional. The innovation are very, very slow to get adopted.
Well, that's not characteristic only of fashion though, Nico. I mean, think about cement industry. I mean, I don't have anything against them, but it's not exactly the most exciting of industries, right? Even there, you have increasing innovation by startups that come in because the traditional methods are too energy intensive,
polluting,
right? And polluting, right? So even in the cement industry, you see innovation. Another one, shipping, for instance. There has been a lot of discussion about fuels, but fundamentally, you have to rethink the actual ship. Similarly to the airline industry, you can, of course, think about the fuels that go into the aircraft, but you have to, at some point, start rethinking about the aircraft. So you see, it's really, really hard for me to find an industry that's not going to be disrupted or does not, an industry that can transition without that innovation. And as you said, it's particularly these commodity industries that we mentioned earlier, and not just in terms of materials, think about the food supply, you know, literally having cows and producing meat, that's also problematic. Now that you have plant-based diets and you have impossible foods and beyond meat and a lot of people being health conscious, even that industry is at risk. So literally there's no industry that is safe in my view. It's just a matter of when it's going to be disrupted. The taxi industry was very traditional and nobody thought it would ever be disrupted until Uber came about.
Uber came.
Right? Same with the hotel industry until Airbnb came about. So, you know, it's exactly when you think you're safe or you're not susceptible to disruption that actually a young, brilliant entrepreneur comes in and upsets the whole game.
Professor, we have the last question now. What did you see as the next biggest challenge in sustainability?
I think the sustainability is packed with challenges. I think the world is waking up to the fact that these sustainable development goals that we all agree to are not just inspirational or motivational targets that we need to achieve. It's arguably the largest industrial challenge in living memory. The Sustainable Development Goals are asking us to change our infrastructure, our transportation, our energy system, the way we look poverty, the way we look equality, the way we look pretty much everything. So I think the Sustainable Development Goals pretty much summarize all the challenges that we have ahead of us, and they are a lot. And they are telling us that we need innovative solutions, and we need organizations that can scale them up quickly, efficiently, effectively, and profitably. That's the biggest challenge going forward. Now, there are sub-challenges, right? For instance, I'm not convinced that this all target setting with respect to carbon emissions is enough. We need to see science-based plans, because if you go net zero too late, it's still not enough to prevent climate change. So there's all of those scientific challenges and the social challenges, the fact that there is civil unrest around the world and some democracies are under threat. I mean, the US came very close, right, in under Trump. So there are all of these challenges, but I think they are very nicely summarized in the US Sustainable Development Goals, in which we are underinvesting, by the way, on an annual basis. So that is, we kind of come back full circle to where we started. The sustainability is the challenge in and of itself of our times. And we need to get our act together across industries, measuring, monitoring, but importantly, innovating and adjusting our lifestyles to you know, live according to our means, live according to you know, what this planet can sustain.
Thanks. It was very nice to meet you, and we hope to see you in person any day soon.
Somewhere, somehow. All right, guys.
If you like this episode and you would like to learn more about fashion and sustainability, check out the Sustainable Academy, a community of people like me and like you that like fashion and sustainability and they want to clean the greenwash. Sustainableacademy.org